And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, today we're going to be examining kosher politics. Kosher politics. Now, a lot of people understand what kosher means. It means that something's right, that something is correct, that something's got the stamp of approval of the Jews. Doesn't it? You know, you go to the store and people don't know, but there's on a lot of products, there's a little bitty stamp of approval. It's a K. What does that K stand for? You know, I've seen it on a lot of products, on cereal and on meats and all kind of stuff. The little bitty K, what does it mean? Well, I'm told it means that's kosher. Well, how did it get kosher? Well, you may not understand this, but the Jews are making millions of dollars each year because rabbis go to meat packing houses and, you know, they go to, Post Cereals and Kellogg's, and they go to Campbell's Soup Company, and they say, you know, what do they do? They just sort of look over it and say, yep, that's kosher. Now, they really don't do anything. I mean, it's just the fact that it has a kosher stamp of approval on it. And they charge millions of dollars. Now, it may not mean half a penny to you for each pack of cereal, for each oatmeal carton or box, or each six-pack of Coca-Colas. May only cost you a half a cent, or maybe even one-tenth of a cent. But it does add up, I guess, over a lifetime. But if they don't give the kosher on it, then the Jews won't buy it. So it's sort of a blackmail thing, you know, they basically say, we're not going to give you our stamp of approval. Of course, there's not enough Jews in America to make it really matter much. I mean, if the Jews don't want to buy my brand of cereal or my type of Campbell's soup or some other kind of product, wouldn't hurt me any, and wouldn't hurt the company very much either, because not many Jews buy their products. And what it really is, though, is sort of a, you know, it's a browbeating thing. You know, we're going to say bad things about your company if you don't give us money. Now, I understand the Muslims are doing the same thing now. They have something called halal, H-A-L-A-L. And the food has to get the halal stamp of approval. That means some Muslim imam is going by and said, yeah, that's good. And they'll go to a whole meat packing plant and they'll say, yes, it's good. Well, they haven't tested. They don't do anything to test. The rabbi is not a food tester anyway. He doesn't have any scientific knowledge or understanding or background. And many times they don't say anything. They just, every year or so, they'll get with a rabbi and say, we need a letter from you saying that all our food this coming year is kosher. And he's, okay, that'll be $100,000. Okay, well, he's got $100,000 in his pocket. Now, which rabbis get this blessing, this untold blessing of being able to bless things as kosher throughout America and the world, and how much they make? I don't know. The Jews seem to have it all figured out, which rabbi gets what, you know, how much of a share or a portion of the kosher payoff, the bribe, the payola. Well, anyway, that's what kosher really is. And, you know, I've sort of set it aside right now, and maybe someday I'll discuss the subject of kosher. But I'm going to talk about it today in terms of kosher politics. Now, what could kosher politics be? Well, the Jews say, if you support Israel, we'll give you our kosher stamp of approval. Now, I don't know where the stamp goes. Maybe it's a tattoo. Maybe they lower their drawers and give it on. Well, I'm not going to say where. Maybe they put it on the back of their neck. Maybe it's like 666 on their forehead. I don't know, but they do give the kosher stamp of approval. Now, they really don't give a tattoo or a rubber stamp or anything like that, but basically, the Jews let Jews know who is for Israel and who isn't. And you can't just be for Israel. You got to be really, really for it. You got to be so for it that, well, it's your love child. It's everything to you. Israel means everything to these candidates. Only when they have insinuated or actually stated outright, that's what many of them do now, that they're Zionists, that we love Israel, that we've got to help Israel. We've got to do, they're our only ally in the whole world. We've got to stop the Muslims from swallowing them up. We've got to do something to help Israel. We've got to give them billions of dollars in foreign aid. We've got to send them military weapons. We've got to send them the nuclear bomb. I mean, they got to be able to blow up everybody on earth. We got to do all these things. Only then will you be given this kosher stamp of approval. Now, the kosher stamp of approval for politics is very important. Believe me, if you're not a kosher politician, you're not going to be elected. Now, you might get dog catcher or maybe even city councilman in some little town or mayor or something, I suppose. But if you're going to be a U.S. senator or congressman, you better be a kosher politician. If you're going to be president of the United States or Supreme Court judge, you better be a kosher politician. Now, why do I say that? You know, Jews only make up about 2 or 3% of the population. I think there's 7 million in all of America out of 320 million people in the population. 7.5 million Jews in America. Now, in terms of the vote, that doesn't mean very much. You can't win with two. If every Jew in America voted, that would be for all the kids. And all, I mean, they certainly don't vote. Maybe 50% of them vote. You couldn't win any office. There's not enough votes for you. So what makes the Jews so important? That every politician wants to say, I am for Israel. They're saying basically, I am a kosher politician. Now we're going to talk about some of these politicians, Republican and Democrat, in just a moment. And I'm going to show you how and why they're kosher politicians. But it's interesting that the Jews have this power over them. What power is that? Well, it all has to do, my friends, with money. Money. The Jews may be only 2.5% of America, but they've got money. How much do they have? Well, let's look at it. The Jerusalem Post, that's a pretty good source, isn't it? The Jerusalem Post says that the influence of American Jewry, that's what they call it, Jewry, in Washington, D.C., is, quote, far disproportionate to the size of the community. And Jewish leaders and U.S. officials acknowledge this, says the newspaper. But, the Jerusalem Post goes on to say, the amount of money they contribute to election campaigns is also disproportionate, far outsized to their numbers in the community. One member, it says here, of the influential Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. You see, they not only have Jewish organizations, AIPAC, the ADL, many others, but they even have a conference of presidents of them. They all work together. Now, they don't work together for, you know, anybody but Israel, for the Jews. The Jews are for the Jews, for their little tribe. They don't really give a hang what happens to the Indians, and I'm referring to the Native American Indians. They don't care what happens to white people or black people or Chinese people or anyone. They only worry about Israel. But it says here that they're extremely powerful, and this Conference of Presidents of American Jewish Organizations estimated that Jews alone contributed over 50% of the funds for President Bill Clinton's 1996 reelection campaign. Now, that was almost 20 years ago. But then I read separately that when George W. Bush ran for president the first time, that 68% of all of the money that he took in came from Jews. 50% in 1996, and then several years later, George W. Bush ran for president, and he got 68. That's over two-thirds of all the money that's come in, that George W. Bush used to buy ads, do travel, do everything for his campaign. And you know, a political campaign costs a lot of money nowadays, especially a president. No one can run for president unless they have a lot of money. So Jews contributed over 2/3. Now, President Bush has been out of the office now for 7 years. I wonder what it's going to be this election. It's probably going to be humongous. Now, you know what the word humongous means, don't you? If you don't, get a dictionary and look it up, because I'm telling you, the amount of money that Jews give to politicians to influence their votes for Israel is humongous. Now, somebody say, Tex, just a minute. Now, hold on. They don't give it for Israel. These are American Jews. Oh, come on. Come on. It's for Israel. I'll prove that in a moment, too. Billionaire Jews are giving millions and millions of dollars to kosher politicians in America to influence these politicians to vote for Israel. Now, how can you vote for Israel if you're a governor or you're a congressman or a senator or a president? How does Israel, I mean, that's a small nation in the Middle East. It's one of about 175 nations in the United Nations. I mean, if you look at it on the map, it can be swallowed up by all the Arab nations around it. It only has around 7 million people. 7 million. There's more Jews, or at least the same amount, practically, of Jews in the United States as there is in Israel. Why do American Jews care about Israel? Now, I must tell you, I was told when I was a teenager, that my family came from Scotland. But I don't really give a big fig, F-I-G. I use that word because we used to have a lot of figs back home. Don't see many figs here in Central Texas. We used to have a lot of fig trees. And we used to use that term, I don't give a fig. Well, figs were so prevalent everywhere that they were pretty cheap. Well, I don't give a fig for Scotland. That means I don't care much for Scotland. I mean, Scotland's a nice place. I've never been there. I don't really want to go. I don't want to spend my money. I'd rather go somewhere here in the beautiful United States. There's places I haven't been here. I haven't been to Montana. I haven't been to Yellowstone National Park. I haven't been to the Dakotas. I was in Pennsylvania, but I didn't get, you know, all the smaller towns. I'd love to go there. And there's just a lot of places I haven't been, and I'd like to go here in the United States. But it is true that the Jews in the United States are fanatically attached to the little nation of Israel that did not even exist until Jews began pouring in there in 1948 and stole the land from the Palestinians that were there. Now, they'll even lead you to believe that there were no Palestinians there when they got there. You know, they got there, they took the Palestinians, they stole their lands, they drove them out into the desert, they killed many of them to make them leave the lands. Then they said, well, we had to come to this country from Poland and other nations where the Jews were. When we came here, there was nobody here. Now, friends, there's nowhere on earth that if you go there, there's nobody there. I mean, there might be, but somebody's claiming it. The Sahara Desert is claimed. Who wants to go live in the middle of the Sahara Desert? But it's claimed by somebody as their homeland. And the Palestinians were the majority of the people living in Palestine. And the Jews came in, changed the name up to Israel, and started killing all the Palestinians and put them into these basically just concentration camps. Now they have, of course, they have a big apartheid system going there, and they actually keep them in. They don't even let them travel on certain highways, don't let them come in certain districts, housing districts and so forth, certain areas of Jerusalem that the Palestinians can't even go. And they put up a big wall, like the Berlin Wall, saying Palestinians have to stay on that side of the wall. But the Palestinians say, I was born on the other side of the wall. Well, we took it. Well, it was mine. My ancestors have been here for hundreds of years. Oh, really? When we came here, there was nobody here. Now, Newt Gingrich is a big kosher politician. And Newt Gingrich was supported financially by a Jew billionaire named Sheldon Adelson. Who is Sheldon Adelson? Well, he's got billions. And he owns the Sands Casino and Motel. There's a Sands Casino in a little island off of Macau, off of China. And, of course, there in Las Vegas. Well, Sheldon Adelson owns these casinos. And he's very, very glad to give his money to politicians, but not just anybody. See, Sheldon Adelson will only give it to those people who vote for Israel. Well, you must say, well, Sheldon Adelson must be from Israel. I mean, that's why he does that, right? No. But his parents poisoned him when he was a little boy. They told him, do everything for Israel. God's given us Israel. You're the chosen ones of Israel. You're a God. Someday the Jews are going to own the whole world. They're going to call all the world Israel, greater Israel. But right now you must do for Israel. You're going to do it for God. That's a mitzvah. That means a good work in Judaism. Now, I suppose if my dad had told me all my life, Scotland is it, son. You're Scottish. You're not American. That's just a feature of your birth. That's where you were born, but you're not American. No, you're Scottish. And someday we're all going to go back to Scotland. And Scotland is going to take over the whole world. It's going to be greater Scotland. And the president of Scotland will be king. And, you know, your God's chosen as a Scotland, the Scottish man. It is Scottish, Jerry, right? Jerry's my engineer here in the studio. Now, why isn't it Scotch? I don't know. Could be Scotch, but I guess it's Scottish. I've seen it many times. But I'm told that I'm Scottish. Now, that could be a mistake, see, because my dad, when I was just a little kid, kids go around and say, where do you come from? Well, and they used to do it more because I'm quite old now, you know. But when I was a little kid, they had a lot of different foreigners in America, and they'd say, where are you from? Well, I'm from Holland. Oh, you're Dutch. Or I'm from France. Oh, you're French. Well, I'm from Louisiana. Oh, so you're still French. So I went to my dad. And I said, Dad, what are we? And all the kids seemed to know at school. Of course, a lot of them made it up. They didn't really know. Because remember, on St. Patrick's Day, they're all Irish. Even the Frenchmen and the Germans and the Jews and I think even the blacks say they're Irish on that day. You wear these things, kiss me, I'm Irish, you know. Everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Well, I asked my dad, what am I? He said, let me think. See, my dad was born in America, and his father was born in America. As far as we knew, way, way back. But my dad said, well, you know, I was told that we were Irish. That's what you are. You're Irish. So I told all my brothers and sisters, guess what? We're Irish. We're from Ireland. Well, we never talked with the Irish brogue, and I didn't know one thing. And I really didn't. That was it. That was the end of it. I'm Irish, okay? I never wanted to go back to Ireland. I never said Ireland was better than America. I never said I'm going to vote for Ireland. I never said if I ever get to be a senator, Ireland's going to be number one. I mean, I'm going to give my whole soul, my life to Ireland. No, I never did that. It was just a comment my dad made. But then when I was, I think, 16 years of age, we got a letter in the mail. It said, welcome, Mr. Mars and your family. We invite you to the picnic of the Mars clan. Yes, you are Scottish like us. All the Marses in the United States are Scottish. And we're going to have a big Scottish clan, you know, picnic in Fort Worth, Texas. And all the Scottish are going to be there, you know, all the Scottish Marses. My dad said, well, how about that, son? We're Scottish. I said, we're not Irish anymore. No, I guess I was mistaken. We're Scottish. Well, I asked my mother, where are you from, Mom? She says, well, Grandma so-and-so said I was this, and then Grandma so-and-so said I was this. But I believe, she said, that I'm mostly French. Well, she sort of looks French, you know. But I'm also Indian, she said. I said, oh, really? What kind of Indian? She, you know, sputtered around. I think she finally told me. I've been thinking of going to the federal government. Maybe don't they have a pension for Indians? Yeah, you know, and I think they have a lot of money. I know that most Indians now, and it's not like the old days where they're all poor and got cheated. Now their lands are worth a lot. They've found oil on them and gold on them, and of course they're putting all these casinos. They're owning all the gambling casinos. These Indian tribes. Well, we got a few here in Texas, so I think maybe I'll just go down and say I'm an Indian. And I can prove it. My mother, she said we're an Indian. Somebody told me once that they went back and checked their heritage and found out that, you know, about 100 years ago, their grandmother something was Cherokee Indian. I think it was Cherokee. And they went to the federal government and they got somehow on the, they had to prove that. And so they got back in the birth records and the genealogical records and proved that they were, I mean, they didn't look like an Indian, but they proved that somewhere in their background, there was Indian blood. And they had to file out a claim, and suddenly they started getting like $1,300 a month from the federal government for being Indian. But they never knew they were Indian until somebody mentioned, you know, hey, you're Indian, you're Cherokee. I see, folks, I'm trying to help you out. Maybe you didn't know that you're Indian. Maybe you're part Indian. Seems that everybody in America is part Indian. It does, doesn't it? Everybody I've ever met, say, yeah, I'm a little part Indian. Okay, well, you might stake your claim. Now, I read some black man from New York City. He claimed he was Indian, and he got a bunch of land and opened up a casino, a gambling casino. And then they checked his blood lineage and all that stuff and found that he was just a black man from Africa. He wasn't a Native American Indian at all. And so I'm not asking you to lie. Just tell the truth if you're really part Indian. Now, I don't think I'm going to waste my time on that. I just like to be American. I'm just a Texan. I put America first. I do. I think we ought to have a political party just called the American Party. Don't you, folks? We're just Americans. Now I'm a Texan also. I'm a Texas American. Well, you know what Davy Crockett said? No, I'm not going to say that. But you people can go to blazes, basically. He was upset something. He, I don't know if he lost the election or something for Congress. Davy Crockett, you know, the famous frontiersman, supposedly he stared a bear to death. I don't know if you could do that or not, but anyway, they claimed that he stared this bear and they kept looking at each other. Finally, the bear just fell over dead. That's how powerful the stare of Davy Crockett was. I don't know why that didn't happen to the Mexicans he fought, because he lost to Santa Ana there in the Alamo. But in any case, we recognize him as a good Texan. He came here to Texas from Tennessee. But he said, you people there in Tennessee can go to blazes. For me, I'm going to Texas. And that's where he came. Of course, he died here. You know, that's maybe he should have stayed in Tennessee. In any case, what we know about Jews is they still want to be Jews. They don't assimilate with the population, and they call themselves dual citizens. Now, Rahm Emanuel was White House chief of staff. He knew all the top secrets, didn't he? He got everything the president did, President Obama. But he went up when the Gulf War started, he went over there and fought for Israel and the Israeli Defense Forces. Well, I think that he should have been thrown out. Anybody that fights for another country when they were born in America, that's just disgraceful. Then this guy from Galveston, he got a job in government. He was a Jew and he stole all our secrets. He stole thousands of documents. His name is Jonathan Pollard. He's still in prison, but I understand that Obama's has made a little deal and is going to pardon him when he leaves office. He stole all of our military secrets. He gave them to Israel. But Jonathan Pollard was born in Galveston, Texas. That's how fanatical these Jews are. No matter which country they live in, they still claim they're from Israel. I love Israel first. Remember Dominic Strauss-Kahn? Dominic Strauss-Kahn was a Frenchman. They said he was going to be the next French president. He was going to run for president of France. Meanwhile, before that, though, he had a job. He was the head of the World Bank in New York City. But he was from France. Well, he came to America, and he was working there at the World Bank, and he got a big fancy hotel room, about $3,000 a night, and well, he sexually assaulted one of the maids at the hotel. And they finally covered it all up, and I think they paid the woman off, and he was able to go back to France. Now, I heard Dominic Strauss-Kahn on the radio. He was telling how much, now he was born in France. He was a French politician. He was going to end up, they said, president of France, until that rape incident, of course. But he said something that really shook me up. He said, every morning when I wake up, the first thing I do is ask myself, what can I do for Israel today?
Wow.
Now, he didn't say, what can I do for France today? Now, all these Jews living here in America, they should wake up and say, what can I do for America today? Now, I don't say that every day, but I do a lot of days. Of course, now I say, what can I do for God today? America's way down my list, but it's somewhere in there, I guess. But Strauss Kahn said, what can I do for Israel today? That was the first thing that he thought about. Now, these 2.5-3% of Jews that are Americans are really not Americans at all. Now, some of them may be, but most of them are still, they've never even been to Israel, many of them. They don't know anything about it. In fact, you know, through DNA science, we've checked their bloodlines. We now find that most of them are not even Jews. They were born somewhere in southern Russia, in a place called Khazaria. They're not even really Jews. But they were raised as in the Jewish religion. They claim to be Jews. And so, you know, they're like the Bible says about the synagogue of Satan. Them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. That's what they are. Now, why do they give so much money to politicians? Why do they want these kosher politicians? Bill Clinton was one of them. George W. Bush was one of them. But wait just a minute now. George W. Bush was Republican, wasn't he? And Bill Clinton was a Democrat, wasn't he? Oh, yes, they... Exactly right. You see, they control both political parties. Because the Jews have long known when they come into a nation, they look for where they can buy their influence. How can you control America? What's the best way? Well, you control the politicians. We are a political nation. We've got a constitution. It sets forth three branches of government. Plus, there are all the state and local governments. You give your money to those areas, and if you got enough money, well, you can control the politicians. Come on now. You know that, folks. You know that money talks. You know that politicians vote the way they do because of the lobbyists. And these Jewish lobbyists are very big, and they're very powerful, and they're very influential, and they're constantly going in these offices. And I'll prove that to you, too. This is the Zionist connection. These are Zionist Jews. And they want results from kosher politicians. And they call in these politicians. They say, what are you going to do for Israel if I give you money? Now, if I call in a politician and I say, what are you going to do if I give you money? They would laugh at me. They'd say, well, how much you have? I said, well, I'll give you $100. They'd laugh at me. They'd say, well, I know 10 Jewish billionaires that'll give me $50 million each. I'd say, well, I've only got $100. But I'm an American. I put America first. They'd say, well, you need to go, you know, go jump off some mountain in Utah, you know, Texas, Mars. That's not enough money to influence my vote. But if you're a Jewish billionaire and you got maybe, oh, 20 million, maybe 30 million. Goodness, you've got 100 million. Oh, yes, I love Israel. I'm a Zionist, too. Ah, yeah, every morning when I wake up, I'm thinking of Israel. I'm thinking of when I go to bed at night. I'm thinking of when I eat lunch. I'm thinking of it every moment of the day. Give me that money. Well, I know that sounds sort of crazy, but that's the way it works. The Jewish connection, the Zionist connection, it reaches every level of politics in America. And so we have thousands of kosher politicians. That's why America has given Israel everything it wants. That's why Israel today has nuclear bombs. It's an astonishing thing. Now, when we come on the other side, I'm going to give you some names. We're going to talk about the Republicans running for president. We're going to talk about the Democrats running for president. We're going to see which one of those are kosher politicians. Or are they all kosher politicians? We'll be right back after this brief message. You're listening to Tex Mars. Today's subject, kosher politicians, right here on Power of Prophecy. Hello, friends. Tex Mars again here. You know, we have a children's home we give to, the Texas Children's Home, and we've been so pleased to contribute our money and our support for this children's home. I suppose it's been, what, Jerry, maybe 20 years or so? I don't want to overstate it, but it's been a long time. You know, Wanda came up with this idea at first. She said, we need a project that's going to count for something. We want to know where our money goes. We don't want to just give our money to some foreign mission. That's needed, of course, and that's good. But we would like it to be for something we can see. We can go down and inspect it if we want to. We'll know what they're doing. And we said, well, where could that be? Well, then the Texas Children's Home came up. Now, I think this was started by Baptists many years ago, but it's really not a Baptist institution today. We're not really Baptist either. We're just, you know, we're just Christian. That's all. And you don't have to be a Baptist to be there. You're just a child. Now, they accept babies all the way up, and they even have a boys' forum there. And they actually have horses and ride those horses and keep those horses nice and clean and fed and all that. Of course, the girls are doing other things. And it's just a wonderful institution. And all of them go to church there. They have a chapel. I tell you, the response we get. Now, I know that so many of you are givers to this Texas Children's Home. And every penny that you send goes into this 100%. We don't take anything from it. You know, you give money to the United Way and maybe 30% goes for their administration and pay all their top-notch, you know, professionals. And I was shocked recently when I found out that Planned Parenthood, these monsters that are aborting little babies, their leader, Cecile Richards, she said she gets paid $540,000 a year. $540,000 a year. Well, I can tell you, the head of this children's home doesn't get they don't at all. And we don't get a cent either from this. Every dollar you give goes right to the kids. And you know what we get for them? We get their school clothes. We get their school supplies. You say, well, is that it? Well, there are other people out there that are paying for the food and the housing and all that. But we just want to give them some nice clothes to go to school in. We want to get some supplies for them for school. And that's about the extent of where our money goes. It's every year, I guess they teach them right there. You know, the art of letter writing seems to be gone. But I always get a big stack of letters, little notes from these kids every year. Dear Power Prophecy. They don't even know it's Tex Morris, I suppose, because we don't go down there and brag to them. They don't know it's Tex Morris. They know Power Prophecy, though. Dear Power Prophecy, thank you so much. I was able to buy, and they'll tell me, I was able to buy a school lunchbox. I was able to buy my notebooks. I was able to buy a coat or a jacket. I know I'm going to keep warm this year. I was able to buy clothes. You know, I remember one young girl, she said, she was about 12 years old, I think. She said, all my life I've gone to school, and I was always so envious of the other girls. The first day of school, they always had nice new clothes on. And they all wore these nice new clothes. They had nice, you know, their school packs were all, you know, fancy and nice. I still had the same old clothes that I always wore. They just almost, you know, they're just nothing, she said. And I'd have to wear almost the same thing every day. And she said, and sometimes they would come and tease me and say, you're a poor girl, aren't you? You don't have money. You don't have any money. You come from that orphan's home. You don't have any money to buy anything. And they made fun of me. She says, but not this year. Not. I've got a new outfit. Thanks to Power Prophecy. Thank you so much. I'm going to be just like the other girls. You know, think about that. I'm going to be just like the other girls. You know, I was born poor, so I understand that. I wasn't even able to buy socks. And I remember I would push my pants legs down so they would start to go right to the top of my shoes. And I would sit my legs, you know, I just sort of stuck together there because I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want my pants to come up a little bit. And they see that I didn't have any socks that day. They make fun of me. And I remember one time my brothers and I went down to the dump, the city dump. And it smelled terrible, you know, it was the city dump and they dumped all the old garbage there and everything. We found out where it was because we wanted to go see if they had anything there we could, you know, use. So we went to the city dump and I found this wonderful sweater. You know, it was a sleeveless sweater, but it was really pretty. But it had a little bitty flaw in it, a little bitty hole, you know, right here in the stomach line a little bit, just a little bitty hole. But it was a beautiful, and I didn't have any money to buy a sweater. Not only, you know, did you have your shirt, but you actually put a sweater over it when it got cold. That was fantastic. And so I got that right away. I took that right away. I took it home. It was one of my proudest possessions. But as I was starting to go to school one day, I was thinking, you know, if I wear this to school, maybe I'll run into the kid. He's my size. And, you know, we didn't have a big school. It was a small town. Maybe the kid that threw this away will know it was his. He'll say, that's my sweater. Look, see that little hole? That's why I threw it away. How'd you get it? It was in the trash. We put it in the trash can. The garbage man took it away. And so I couldn't wear it to school. I put it back, you know, in my closet. But when I got home every day, I'd put it on. I'd go out and I'd play. You know, we used to play every day till mom would call and say, come in, come on and eat. Come on, you know, come in for supper time. That's what we always call it, supper. It's supper time. But I was afraid to wear it to school. You know, I would be caught wearing something that somebody had thrown away. Now, listen, I think that built my character. It did. It made me pretty tough, you know, when I was poor like that. We had six kids, and mom and dad. Mom didn't work, and so there was no jobs for women back then, but my dad always had a steady job, and we had enough food to eat. In fact, I think we ate rice and beans every day. Never had milk. And one time the milkman used to come by the houses, you know, and deliver milk to people. That was back in the old days. And my dad just had a little bit of money left. He said, how would you kids like some milk today? Oh, yes, we'd love some milk. And he had seen the milkman. He went and said, have you got an extra little carton? And actually it was in bottles back then. And they said, yeah, we'll give you one, you know, for so much cents. My dad brought it in, and you can just imagine there were five of us kids in. My little sister hadn't been born. And all of us got around the kitchen table. My dad gave each of us a glass, and he poured that milk in. And we just sipped at it. It was, you know, like fancy cognac or something in some movie. You know, just sip that milk. And by the way, it had a little bit of cream on top. But my dad put that away, so we're going to use this for cream for something later. But we each had a glass of milk. And I thought I was drinking liquid gold just to drink that milk. That's why I love to support this orphanage, actually the Texas Children's Home. And we're going to keep doing it until we leave this earth, my friends. Now, if you want to give to this children's home, please send your check or your money or your cash and put a little note on it and say, Tex, this is for the children's home. Now, we still need money in the ministry here to keep going. We need this radio program to keep going around the world. I need to keep putting out my books, my videos, my audio tapes to help this message get around the world. But right now, if you're able to, now if you're not able to, you might just be living on Social Security. You don't have enough money for yourself. Well, don't worry about it. No, I'm not trying to put a guilt trip on you at all. No. But if you have a little bit of extra money, you know, if you have $5, you have $20, you know, whatever you have, you send to us and we'll put it all together and we take it down to the orphanage. And I call it an orphanage. They call it a children's home because, you know, there's all kind of kids there. There's kids down there temporary. Their dad was sent to prison. Their mother's a drug addict and was put in rehab. And the kid had nowhere to go, so they go down there. And then later on, when their mother gets a little bit better, and she comes back and gets them. Poor kids. In any case, every cent you give will go to this Texas Children's Home. Please give. Now, at the end of the campaign, if we don't have enough money, we'll donate some from the ministry as well. And we even take up an offering here in the ministry. We give right here in the ministry ourselves from our pocketbooks. So please give to the Texas Children. But now be sure to write a little note. Say, Tex, you know, if you send, let's say, $50 to the ministry, say, Tex, $30 is for you and $20 is for the children's home. Then I'll know we'll put it either in our ministry here or the children's home. So be sure to designate it, okay? You can call us toll free, 1-800-234-9673, 1-800-234-9673, or Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Now, if you're going to send us one of our order forms for a book or something, or books, and, you know, you put down there there's a gift place there, And you can write on that or say, see the reverse side, see the back side, and put, okay, I gave you $20, but 10 of it's for the minute, for the, this month is for the children's home. That'll be okay. Okay. We'll separate it in our books, our accounting books. We know how to do it here and everything. Thank you very much, folks. I know God will bless you for this. I don't think you're going to have anybody else coming to thank you, but these kids, if they could write everybody, they would write a letter to everybody who gives. Maybe sometime I'm going to read some of those letters that come in, because I think it would touch your heart. You know, there's an old saying there, but for the grace of God, go I. So keep that in mind. These children have plenty to eat. They've got good shelter, but they do need these extra things. Okay, let's go back to our power of prophecy today. We're talking about kosher politics. Carl Icahn said something recently. He said, by the way, he's a big Wall Street investor. He's a billionaire. He said, I'm going to set up a political action committee, a super PAC, they call it. And he pledged $150 million of his own money for it. Now, he's a big friend of Donald Trump. But is this money going to go to Donald Trump? I don't think so. Donald Trump says, I got $1 billion to spend if I need to. He's the only one who's got enough money to spend. Now, I think Bush has enough money, but he doesn't want to spend his own money. He likes to spend the people's money, the billionaire's money. But Carl Icahn says, I got $150 million to spend. Hey, folks, how much have you got? Can you compete with Carl Icahn? Can you call up a politician and say, I'm Carl Icahn. How you doing? Let's go to dinner tonight. Let's talk about what I need for Israel. I'm sure he does that. That's probably why he's getting involved. $150 million. But, you know, I got a letter from somebody that said, Dear Tex, do you know Ronald Perelman, who he is? And I sort of remembered Ronald Perelman. He's a billionaire. Said, well, Donald Trump was a regular visitor to Perelman's home in Palm Beach, Florida. These people believe that Trump were their errand boy and fellow Jew. At least he acted like it when he was visiting Perelman, who is worth about $14 billion. When Trump would purchase properties, he would obtain money from people like Perelman. Ronald Perelman is a super Zionist. Donald Trump is also a Zionist. Do you know that Donald Trump gave thousands of dollars for Rahm Emanuel's mayoral campaign in Chicago? Well, I didn't know that before. He's a strong supporter of Israel. Well, okay. Donald Trump. I didn't know those things about Trump. In fact, I had figured that Trump was Jewish because he had so many Jewish friends. Now, some people say, well, now Rand Paul, he's a little guy. He's a doctor and, you know, he's not a kiss up to the Jews. Oh, yeah. Well, Rand Paul says, he says, I visit with the Jews daily. Say what? In fact, you know, he gave a speech on July 31st of this year, and he had put in an amendment to a law, and that amendment eliminated aid to Palestine and to Egypt. Say what? Now, Paul gave a speech on the Senate website, and it was reported on the Senate website. He mentioned Israel no less than 16 times. Israel this, Israel that, Israel that. He said, of course, Israel's having trouble with the Palestinians, but also with their enemy, Egypt. So he said, I've been visiting with these Israeli lobbyists, and I want to recommend this amendment. Now, I thought he represented Kentucky, but he's representing Israel. And what's he dealing with all these Jews for? Why does he meet with them, quote unquote, daily? Then there's Marco Antonio Rubio. Marco Rubio. He talked about the fact that we need immigration reform. We need to close down the wall. We need to do something about all these immigrants in the United States. Then suddenly he and his pal, John McCain, got together and they put together the Gang of Eight. Turned out they wanted the same immigration plan as Obama has, which is amnesty. Now, why would Marco Rubio do that? He was for amnesty. Marco Rubio. He said, now, I still want to enforce the border. They all say that. Even Obama says, I want to enforce the border. Of course, they want nothing of the sort. It's just like a sieve. Millions, millions of illegal immigrants follow the world coming to America. But Marco Rubio suddenly said, yes, I'm with John McCain. I'm with Senator Schumer, the Jew from New York. I'm with the Gang of Eight. We want immigration, comprehensive immigration reform. You ever heard that, folks? Comprehensive immigration reform, what that really means is we want Obama's plan. Full amnesty. The Jews got to him. They want immigration reform too. They want millions. That's why I don't understand the Trump thing. Trump has hit them two ways. And if he's going to keep his pledge, he's going to be in trouble with the Jews. First, he said, we're going to do something about immigration. I'm going to build a great wall. And we're going to deport all these people that are over here illegally. Now, if you take him at his word, then all the Jews are against it. They want America to be a multicultural nation. They don't want us to be Christians, white and black Christians. No, 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 no. They don't want that. They want us to have people from all over the world, Muslims, Hindus, and especially all these Mexicans and Central Americans and South Americans. They want everybody to come to the United States. Why? They want to destroy our nation. They want people to come here that don't know the Constitution, don't know anything about our founding fathers, nothing. They want to destroy, they want to make every nation multicultural. Now, that's crazy, isn't it? Why would they do that? They're Americans too, aren't they? Well, they're not, of course. But look, get this. I was reading a speech. Actually, it was an article, I'm sorry, not a speech, by my good friend Michael Hoffman. Now, Michael Hoffman has written a number of books exposing Judaism. He said, I want to tell you why the Zionist Jews are against immigration to Israel, but they're for immigration to the United States. He said it's a double standard. Among Israelis, it seems that 95% of the people who live in Israel do not want foreigners to come in. They want to maintain Israel's Jewish majority. Now, Netanyahu says, we've got to keep our Jewish majority. We cannot allow immigrants to come to this country. Now, there's millions of immigrants that are desperate from Iraq, from Syria, from Yemen, all these countries that we've been bombing, destroying their homes. And they're coming. They're flooding into Europe. They're coming to America. I understand that Obama said we're going to take in 200,000 Syrians. But Israel says, we don't want even one. We will take in zero. Why is that? I thought they were so wonderful. I thought they were so humanitarian. They say, we don't want anybody but Jews here. They've been busy deporting. They've been busy kicking them out. Did you know they're building tent cities in the desert? And they're taking all these blacks and all these Arabs, and they're putting them in these tent cities. They say, we don't want you in Israel. But as far as America, we want Americans to have all of them. All of the Jewish organizations are fighting right now. They're fighting our senators. They're saying, yes, 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 go, go, go. We want immigration for America because they want to end America. They want Israel to control the whole world. It's in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Now, I was recently reading about a billionaire named Chaim Saban. Saban, S-A-B-A-N. He was on Bloomberg TV. He gave an interview. He said, I'm going to contribute as much as needed to Hillary Clinton in 2016. He said, very proudly, now he said on Bloomberg TV, he said, my greatest concern is to protect Israel. Hold it, Mr. Saban. You're an American, aren't you? Well, yes, but I'm going to say it again. My greatest concern is to protect Israel. I am a one-issue guy, and my issue is Israel. Well, why are you giving money to Hillary Clinton then? I'm going to give as much as needed, he says. Now, he's already given $7 million to the Democratic National Committee. He donated $5 million to Bill Clinton's presidential library. And he's even set up his own think tank, the Saban Center for Middle East Policy. He gives money to the Brookings Institution, which is pro-Israel. $13 million he gave to them. Well, Chaim Saban says, I'm going to give as much money as Hillary needs. Why? Is it because Hillary's going to be a good American? She's going to support the middle class? She's for equality for women? No, she'll do whatever the Jews tell her to do on Israel. That's it. That's why she keeps saying, I'm pro-Israel. That's why she goes to every year's annual convention of the ADL. That's why she goes to the annual convention of American Israel Public Affairs Committee. She's going to get all these millions and millions from Chaim Saban, the Jewish billionaire. Now, there's another billionaire. His name is Sheldon Adelson. I've told you about him. He's owns a Sands casino. He's a big mogul. He's got billions. He says, I'm going to go for the Republicans. I'm going to spend as much money as needed to elect a Republican, but only a Republican who is pro-Zionist Israel. Now, hold it just a minute. Chaim Saban says, I'm going to give as much money as needed to a Democrat, but only if they're pro-Zionist Israel. And then Mr. Adelson, who's equally rich, says, I'm going to give as much money as needed to a Republican, but only a Republican that's pro-Israel. What does it matter, folks? The key here is, are you pro-Israel? That's their only criterion. Now, there's another couple of billionaires named the Koch brothers, K-O-C-H. One of the Kochs was interviewed recently by Megyn Kelly on Fox News. Mr. Koch said, I'm setting up a super PAC. She says, why? I want to give money to politicians that I agree with. Well, what do they have to do? Well, of course, you and I know, folks, the Koch brothers have millions of dollars to give to somebody who is pro-Israel. But they weren't born. They're oil men in America. Sheldon Adelson is a casino. He's for gambling. I don't even know what Haim Saban does. But they're all Americans. But they don't give a fig for America. Remember I talked to you about a fig, very cheap little fruit. They don't care about America. Now, Ann Coulter got everybody all upset recently. She tweeted something. The last debate, seems that they asked the 10 Republican candidates a question. The very last question, they said, would you please tell us what will America be like if you're elected president? The question is, what will America be like? Now, 4 of the 10 said, well, America and Israel will blank, blank, blank. They brought in Israel. They started talking about Israel. They're supposed to be talking about America. What would America be like? But they started talking about what Israel would be. I'm going to defend them, Israel all the way. A 5th candidate, Miss Carly Fiorino, had said earlier when she was asked what would her first thing to do be when she became president. When she's sworn in, what would be her first action? Well, I thought it was to veto something about Obamacare. I thought it was to clean up the Fed. I thought it was maybe to help the middle class. Somebody help us, please. Maybe close down Planned Parenthood, anything. She says, well, the first thing I'm going to do is call my good friend, Bibi Netanyahu in Israel, and I'm going to tell him, we have your back. Huh? She's going to call up Netanyahu in Israel and tell him, that's the first thing she's going to do if she's elected as president? These other 4 guys all said, brought in Israel when they're talking about what they're going to do or what America's going to be like as soon as they get president. Well, Ann Coulter made her start a mess. See, Ann Coulter's got a new book out. It's called Adios Amigo, or Adios America, I think it is. Adios America. That means goodbye, America. She's saying all this immigration, all these millions of aliens flooding in, most of them from down in Central South America and Mexico, is going to change America. We're not going to have America anymore. So she says, Adios America. So she got mad. Now, she's a pro-Zionist. I was shocked. She tweeted. What did her tweet say? Now, I don't want to say the bad word, but she says, do the effing Jews they don't have that many votes. So why are you pandering to them? That's, I'm sort of, you know, shortcutting it for her. That's basically what she said. Why are you pandering to Israel? Israel doesn't have that many effing votes. Now, except for the bad word she said, it was a good statement. Israel doesn't have that many votes. They've only got 7.5 million in America. That's it, no more than 3%. They can't elect anybody president based on their votes. I mean, we probably got more people from Haiti or Trinidad or Uruguay or Colombia. Why do they always mention Israel? Why don't they mention some other country? Uruguay has 60 million people. Brazil has 150 million people. Israel only has 7. Why do they keep, we've got to protect Israel. We've got to do this for Israel. We've got to, Israel, 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 Israel. She's basically said, I'm getting tired of you talking about Israel. Is there anybody out there going to do something for America? She was trying to embarrass these people. Well, what happened was she stirred a big controversy because the Jews control the media, folks. That's another big area you got to own. Got to own the media if you're a Jew and you want to promote Israel, and you got to own the kosher politicians. Boy, did they ever beat her. They beat her about the head. It's not votes. They know what it is. They said one of the columns against her written by a Jew said, we know what she's talking about. It's that Jewish money. That's what she's talking about. And it is. Now, Ted Cruz, all he talks about is Israel, 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 Israel. Vote for me and I'm going to protect Israel. Well, how about protecting Argentina? They got about 90 million people. How about protecting Germany? They got 80 million people. How about protecting England? They got 60 million. Well, just Israel, Israel. Well, I understand because, you see, he met with 10 big Jews in New York City. Now, Ted Cruz is a senator from Texas, but he met with these 10 Jews, billionaires, in New York City, and he told them how much he loved Israel and what he would do for them. How can they? I can get 9 or 10 of my friends together, and I bet Ted Cruz won't come talk to us. How about you? Can you get 10 friends in your hometown together? Maybe Ted Cruz will go talk to you. No, he won't. You know he won't. The affair for 10 billionaires was hosted by two wealthy gay men. Oh, I thought he was against same-sex marriage. I thought he was against. Guess what? He was asked about promoting gay rights. And he told him, mm-hmm. He said, if my daughter turned out to be gay and came and told us, I'd still love her. That's sort of like code words. Of course you would. But that was like a code language. He was basically saying, I'll support you. Don't worry. I'll support your gay rights. Two gay men. They own hotels and other big enterprises in New York City. Cruz says, I'll be your man. Now, there was recently a convention, a big conference of the Jews in New York City. Who was sitting at the dinner table with Sheldon Adelson, the casino mogul? Well, that would be Mr. Cruz. Hey, here's more. Christie. This is interesting. Christie was also at that conference of Jews. He sat at the same table as casino magnate Sheldon Adelson. Christie, the governor of course, of New Jersey. We can go on and on talking about this. And I haven't even got to these other ones. Senator Schumer. Senator Schumer says, he says, well, my role in the United States Senate is to be a guardian for Israel. He's a senator from New York, but he says, my role is to be a guardian of Israel. Mike Huckabee, once a year he goes to Israel. Did you know he went 2 months ago to Israel? Why did he go? Money. I need money for my campaign, so he went to Israel. What are you going to Israel for? Why don't you go to Uruguay? They got 10 times as many people there. Oh, well, Why don't you go to Texas? We got a lot of people with money here. The Jews have more. 2/3 of all the money given to George W. Bush for his presidential campaign from Jewish billionaires. The Supreme Court has ruled that you can give as much money as you want. You set up a super PAC, give it. Give the money. That's why Mr. Saban, that's why Mr. Adelson, that's why Mr. Koch, that's why these wealthy gay Jews in New York are supporting Ted Cruz. They're kosher politicians. Friends, we don't have a chance anymore. America's been taken over by Jewish billionaires who are putting kosher politicians in office. That's all we have. They said that Obama was the first Jewish president. He's not Jewish. His mother wasn't Jewish. His dad certainly wasn't, but he got most of his campaign money from Jews. They said he's the first Jewish president. Wow. Are we going to support a Jewish president next time? I don't know about Donald Trump. He seems to be better than the other guys. He's against immigration, and they're for immigration. Boy, they don't like him for that. He's for a new trade, and they think we've already got the trade that they want. Crooked, corrupt trade agreements. He says he's going to change them all. Seems like he's going right against the Jews. Maybe he won't be elected president because of that. We'll see. I'm Tex Mars. You've been listening to Kosher Politicians. I could go on and on for 5 or 6 hours. I've got so much material on it. Every one of those candidates, kosher politicians. I don't know of one that's not. Trump may not be. I'm hoping he's not. Now, I didn't even mention, who's the black man there? Ben Carson. He said he doesn't accept money from a billionaire. Oh, how did he get so powerful? How did he get to be a speaker at the presidential prayer breakfast a few years back? Anytime you get up that high in politics, you probably got money from Jewish billionaires. Remember Herman Cain, the black man? Yeah, he had money from the Koch brothers. We'll find out about Ben Carson. I'll let you know in coming weeks right here on Power of Prophecy. So tune in each week, my friend. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy. Thank you.